I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's your voice and your vote. Daily in-depth coverage on Dave and Dujanovic.
We've been asking you to think about this all week long. Who's been influencing your vote?
Yeah, is it family members? Is it the debates? Well, today we're looking at social media and the incredible popularity of conservative commentators. This was shocking news to former ABC News anchor Ted Koppel.
You're kind of leaving me speechless here.
Really? Ted Koppel speechless? In TV and radio, we have something you all know as ratings. We've been using Nielsen ratings for decades.
Ever.
I'm trying to remember. I got in the business in 88, 89, and I'm pretty sure we were using that service in Phoenix when I was first in the business. We track ratings. We track shares. So the share is, you know, how much of the audience who has their television on is actually watching a particular station. For example, the Super Bowl had a 41.7 rating. That's 100 million viewers. 70% of all TVs were tuned into that game. That's the share.
That means of every television in the country that is on, 70% of them are watching the Super Bowl. And that's the biggest television event of the year. Nothing else comes close.
But then you turn to the web. The web measures how much attention we pay to a particular post by page views. And then social media measures what's called interactions.
Yeah, an interaction is every time you like something, you heart it, comment, you share it. That's an interaction. So in the social media world, interactions reign supreme.
So let's go back to Ted Koppel and why he was so speechless. There's a New York Times columnist who was interviewing Ted and broke the news to him that conservative social media is dominating the networks online.
And you're telling me that they have more people coming to them then collectively come to ABC News, NBC News, CBS News, New York Times, Washington Post. Spell that out for me. Where are they going?
So there's a right-wing commentator named Ben Shapiro. He's very popular among conservatives. And in the last 30 days on his Facebook page, he has gotten 51.4 million interactions. That's more than five times as many as the New York Times. And it's more than CBS, CNN, NBC, ABC combined.
You're kind of leaving me speechless here.
The old guard is trying to wrap their heads around this. Social media plays such a huge role in people and their politics. And that's what we're asking is, who's influencing your vote? Well, if you're on social media, it's the conservatives.
Speaking of Ben Shapiro, Jason Perry, you're with us?
I am with
Hi,
you, yes.
Director.
Can't wait to see what's coming next.
Yeah, close your eyes. Here we go, Jason. You're the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. Great debate last week, by the way, up at the University of Utah. Great job on that with the vice presidential candidates in town. And speaking of Ben Shapiro, 3 years ago, he visited the U of U campus.
Bottom line is that without the belief that there is a purpose to the universe, without a belief that there is a purpose to your life, without a belief that you have the capacity to make individual choices, it's very difficult to build a civilization. By difficult, I mean impossible.
And that was 3 years ago, Jason. Shapiro visits the campus. He was popular then, but now, I mean, he's the social media version of Rush Limbaugh. What was it like when he came?
Well, there was a segment of campus and the community that liked the message. There was a very distinct section of the campus that did not like it either. But that's just kind of the nature of politics right now. You just kind of find both sides. It was controversial when he came. All thoughts are welcome, mostly at the University of Utah, as we think about that. But what you're saying is exactly right, is these kind of speakers, particularly right now, have power because it's all about confirmation bias. The people that are liking these particular people are being fed a constant diet of it. You look at social media, it knows what you like to eat, and it just feeds you time and time again. I think that's why you're seeing polarized figures on both sides getting huge followings.
I want to get into what I read yesterday. It was a Forbes article about the influence that Snapchat has. I have Snapchat on my phone, and I have exactly two followers, and both of them are my daughters. But Snapchat is huge in the minds of young people, and they use it all the time. They have helped, apparently this app, Jason, has helped register over 1 million people, most of them under the age of 24. So when you talk about what's influencing your vote, you're also talking about who's or what app is influencing young people to get out to vote. Who does that help in this election?
Well, if you look at the numbers right now, if you have a whole lot of really young voters, this tends to help the Democrats, is the reality right now. And you know, you kind of have to look at what sites people are using. And the Snapchat is great for registering the people to vote. What I hope is that next step, and we've talked about it together before, is they're supporters and people are finding people they identify with and support. But do they turn in that ballot? That is the next thing that is absolutely important. And it goes to the messages that they're hearing right now. But I think there's bigger picture at play as to what's motivating people to show up and vote as well in this particular election cycle. And it is not just because they saw something on Snapchat.
They've spent across the country all combined over $1 billion on digital ads. The presidential candidates have spent over $200 million just on Facebook. Does that show us a little bit of the trend of where that money's going to be spent or the power of social media in elections?
Yeah, there is a huge amount of power in social media, no doubt about it. And what social media is capitalizing on right now is that people in the country, I'll tell you, families and others are at a breaking point. When you look at what's happened with the pandemic and the tentacles that go out into the economy and the other things, I think what social media is capturing is this one point right here. As we have come to realize that the decisions for the most important things in our lives, our jobs, the ability for our family to eat, even if we can get a vaccine, are all being made. Those decisions are being made by someone else. For such a long time, we felt like, well, we're pretty much in control of our lives. We make these big decisions for ourselves. But what's become very real is that someone else is making these most important decisions for us. And social media, as you've been talking about, is capturing that fact. They're playing on some of the fears, some of the opportunities. But that uncertainty, the sleeping giant that is awakened right now, is what is feeding these machines. And these machines are trying to find those people.
Jason, we have about 30 seconds left. I guess my concern is not necessarily, it is certainly the amount of money that's being spent on social media, but not necessarily just that. But also just random posts from friends of mine who really aren't that educated but tend to be a little bit of conspiracy theorists in how they are posting. And I think that's also a potential to influence votes.
You are absolutely right, and it is. And that is a way people try to get you to kind of come to that side, whatever it is. And, you know, I can appreciate the fact that people are getting their meat from these places. They're feeding on these conspiracies. But I'll tell you what we got to do. Sometimes we got to eat the vegetables, too. You know, we got to hit the other side. We got to put those things aside, get to the heart of these things.
Jason Perry, thank you so much for joining us, the director at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. Debbie, it's astounding the money that's spent, the change, though. I thought that was fascinating, the change in the way people are consuming their news. Instead of going to the big networks, as has been the case for decades and decades, they're going out and choosing who they want to follow, and it's more individuals than networks.
Much more straight ahead in the 10 o'clock hour, including a live interview with UVU and how they managed to tamp down the COVID spike on campus.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.